Welcome to Dementia Matters, a podcast presented by the Wisconsin Alzheimer's Disease Research Center. Our podcast is here to educate you on the latest research, caregiver strategies, and available resources for fighting back against this disease. I'm your host, Nathaniel Chen. Thanks for joining us. Our guest today is Dr. James Law from Emory University in Atlanta, Georgia. Dr. Law is a neurologist who studies Alzheimer's disease and healthy aging. Dr. Law, welcome to Dementia Matters.
Thank you very much, Dr. Chen.
Now, you are a physician who treats and diagnoses patients with brain disorders like Alzheimer's disease and other dementias. But you also lead a research team that looks at the causes of Alzheimer's disease and is focused on studying people in middle age in an attempt to identify common traits in healthy agers. And on the flip side, perhaps traits you see across the spectrum of unhealthy agers. So can you tell us, what do healthy agers have in common?
Well, it's a common question, of course, that we get. I'm sure you get it as well. People want to know, well, what can I do to prevent getting Alzheimer's disease? I tell them there's a couple of guaranteed ways to avoid that. One is to be highly selective in your choice of parents. And the second is to not get old. Unfortunately, right now, we know a lot of epidemiological data, certainly that associates with either increased or decreased risk. Family history has a huge amount to do with it. Lifestyle choices also has a lot to do with it. And I think the evidence is increasing now that those choices that we make during earlier life can have a big impact in sort of coming up with our overall risk of developing cognitive problems due to Alzheimer's and other conditions later in life. So things like healthy lifestyle choices in terms of diet, exercise, educational level. And I've always been a firm believer that what we do with our brains during younger years can have a big impact. But there's really a lot that we don't know about the things that differentiate between healthy and unhealthy cognitive aging. And so that's part of the focus of what we're working on in healthy middle-aged individuals.
How would you define younger or healthy middle age, I guess, time-wise?
Yeah, well, I think the epidemiological data really points to activities in young and middle adulthood. And that means really starting way back in our 30s and 40s. But also there's a lot of evidence that what happens in our 40s, 50s can have a big impact on what happens to our brains in our 70s and 80s. So the age ranges, I think, are pretty arbitrary. But in general, I think you can say that from adulthood forward, once you're launching on your careers, and the things that you do to keep yourself active is really important in determining your trajectory of lifespan and a health span in your 70s, 80s, and even into your 90s.
Do you see any traits on the negative that if you do something like this, it really increases your risk of some sort of issue later in life?
Yeah, so there's a lot of evidence linking cardiovascular disease to not just Alzheimer's disease, but to cognitive aging in general. So we know that there's a strong link between hypertension, diabetes, those two in particular. And so people who don't take care of those conditions, those cardiovascular factors during life, I think really put themselves at great risk for developing cognitive problems later on in life.
And has anything surprised you in this research, something you never expected to be associated?
We're a little early in the healthy aging study to draw conclusions. We've just started analyzing some of the biospecimens that we've collected. But I'll tell you, one of the things that has really shocked me in a pleasant way is the willingness of people to participate in certain activities. So it's really pretty remarkable. When we've done the surveys in the larger cohort, at least two-thirds of them, the respondents, express a willingness to undergo even invasive procedures to support research. So it's really kind of an encouraging sign about how seriously people take this and how willing they are to help support efforts to find better tools. So that's been really pleasantly surprised at the willingness of people to do something like that.
Now, I'm sure patients, friends, and family members all ask you what they can do to avoid Alzheimer's disease, to prevent it. But I guess what I'm wondering from you as a scientist and an expert in the field, what do you do personally to address your health, your brain health?
So I try to do as I preach and make sure that I eat as well as I can and exercise. The aerobic exercise is turning out to be maybe not even just a method of reducing risk, but may actually trigger a series of physiological changes that actually reduces risk by mechanisms we don't fully understand yet. So until we get to a point, and I think we're going to get there pretty soon, but until we get to a point where we can deploy prevention treatments, the things that we've been telling our patients to do are things that we all need to be doing ourselves, the exercise, the eating right. Most of us who are busy in our careers don't have a lot of trouble keeping our brains active because it's sort of required. But continuing those things and maintaining that is, I think, the best that we can currently do, and then support the research activities that will eventually give us better treatments to prevent disease.
And then on the treatment end, you know, what everyone is hoping for and what the research community is working towards is, of course, a cure for Alzheimer's disease. What we have learned from cancer research is that a cure is not always a one-size-fits-all. So what do you think an Alzheimer's disease cure might look like?
So I've been saying for over 20 years now that I expect to see a cure, air quotes, cure for Alzheimer's disease before my career is done. And what that means to me is not that we're going to necessarily be able to take patients who are experiencing symptoms and turn it around. I think it's very unlikely that we're going to see that, at least in my lifetime. And so a cure for me, we know from the work that's happened in the last 15 to 20 years, unequivocally, that the pathology of Alzheimer's is evolving from perhaps 20 years or more before people get sick. And so a cure for me is going to mean a combination of early detection of pathology in people before they become sick, but more developing tools to predict which of those people who have pathology are going to develop problems, because not everybody will. And then the treatments that are currently so promising, targeting those fundamental pathologies of Alzheimer's disease, I think will ultimately prove to be effective. But I think the current strategies at least, I think will only be effective if we deploy them very, very early, either at the earliest symptomatic stages or more likely in pre-symptomatic stages.
And I imagine as a physician who treats people, you have patients who already have dementia due to Alzheimer's disease, and they must be asking you, when is the next drug coming out?
Yeah.
And in my clinic, I will tell them that success won't be reversal or cure, but really modifying the disease so that the good times last longer.
That's exactly right. And, you know, I think we don't do anybody a service by misleading them. And so people who are symptomatic now, I think, realize that the prospects of them getting truly effective treatments is maybe, you know, not as good as we would like. But the way I always talk about that is, you know, when people hear Alzheimer's disease, they don't picture one of our patients who has mild cognitive impairment or very early stage dementia where, you know, they may have the annoyance of forgetfulness and maybe having difficulty or limitations in driving or some other things that's, you know, not pleasant. But they still enjoy interactions with their families and friends. They have a good quality of life. And so what I set for them as a goal, our symptomatic patients, is to do all of the things, the lifestyle-related things, the drugs that we currently have that can not really slow things down but buy us a little bit of time, and do everything they can to go kicking and clawing every inch of the way so that, you know, when they get run over by that bus or drop dead of a heart attack, that they're still functioning at a high enough level to enjoy a good quality of life. And people really respond to that very well. It gives them a positive way to look at their illness. And also with some of the lifestyle recommendations, at least gives them a sense of some empowerment that there are things that they may be able to do to impact the course of their own illness.
Now, you are the lead investigator of the largest ever clinical research study in Atlanta called the Healthy Aging Study, where you hope to enroll 100,000 people. The study is looking at people over the age of 18 and requires that the participant complete a short 10-question survey or a 2 to 3 minute assessment, which is a game or a puzzle, every few months. That's it. And enrollment can be done online from home and takes 20 minutes or so. So in essence, a person in your study never has to see you or the research center for that part. How is this new model working out for you, and what prompted you to initiate it?
So that's a really great question. The entire study was made possible by a very generous donation from a local philanthropy, the Goizueta Foundation. And the leaders of that group, they're in their late 40s and 50s, and there was a family history of Alzheimer's disease. And so the current generation leaders of that foundation became concerned, and they came to us and asked for us to propose something that we felt would be transformative in the field. And the proposal that we gave them was to identify predictive factors. So I mentioned earlier that not only detecting the presence of Alzheimer's pathology, but also being able to predict the trajectory of that pathology was going to be important for future management. And so as our development of that project went along, we realized that it was an opportunity to create a huge cohort of individuals from which we could identify people to participate in the Healthy Brain Study, but also could support aging research more broadly. So we got input from our colleagues in cardiology and immunology and cancer and inflammation, all across the board, to find out what would be useful for them to know in order to be able to pull on this larger cohort. And that's what we've been doing. And that cohort, it's over 15,000. So we're getting close to 20% of the way to the 100,000 initial target. So we hope it becomes a resource, not just locally in the Atlanta region, but for investigators anywhere that want to access that cohort to address their own research questions.
Well, with that, I would like to thank you for joining us on Dementia Matters. And when you come back to Madison, we'd love to have you on again.
My pleasure. Thank you very much.
Dementia Matters is brought to you by the Wisconsin Alzheimer's Disease Research Center. The Wisconsin Alzheimer's Disease Research Center combines academic, clinical, and research expertise from the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine and Public Health and the Geriatric Research, Education, and Clinical Center of the William S. Middleton Memorial Veterans Hospital in Madison, Wisconsin. It receives funding from private, university, state, and national sources, including an NIH-NIA grant for Alzheimer's disease centers. This episode was produced by Rebecca Wazileski and edited by Alex Wortley. Our music is Cases to Rest by Blue Dot Sessions. If you're interested in learning more about the Wisconsin ADRC, check out our website at adrc.wisc.edu. If you have any questions or comments, don't hesitate to let us know. Thanks for listening.